All right, well, welcome to the Luma Roundtable. It's a podcast where we pick an album to focus on for the month, and we come together to discuss it. This week on the pod, or this month on the pod, we've got good old pal Jason Sliva, my co-host Henry Zimmerman, and I'm very excited to introduce our old boss from the college radio station we all met at, John Harlow.
Boss man.
Well, thank you.
Boss man.
El jefe.
Excited to have you on, dude.
It's going all right. excited to see all y'all. It's been a minute. What? Jason, you were saying like 5 years?
Yeah, probably 5 years.
It's crazy.
Our last conversation was probably just about like some chemical engineering or something.
Oh,
you talking about your off about chemical engineering and me trying to understand.
I'm so glad I'm done with that.
So we don't usually do this, but do we want to just catch up for a minute? Like what's everybody been doing since college? Should we go around and trade?
Sure.
Yeah, John, what have you been up to, man?
Oh man, I don't even know where to start. I finished up. I went out to the San Francisco Bay Area for a bit. Worked out there for a couple of years doing like environmental compliance type stuff, and then realized that I could just pay rent forever and never get ahead. And so I came back home. You know, did the whole thing. Lived in the parents' basement for a bit, saved up some money, then bought a house, and now I'm doing that.
Did you like San Francisco?
Oh, it was cool, right? I mean, Bay Area is an interesting spot. I was in the East Bay, out like Oakland side of the Bay Bridge. So like Oakland, Berkeley, all that through there. San Francisco is kind of not what it used to be. No, have you been out there?
Oh, once. Yeah, I just did the touristy things, like go to the Golden Gate. Yeah, I did surf
that street that goes back and forth.
Yeah, like Sunset Boulevard or whatever area.
I can't remember what it's called, but yeah, I mean it's good. It's neat living out there.
Yeah,
right. There's always stuff going on. You can go see the redwoods if you have a car. They're cool. It's like San Francisco proper got too expensive, and all the cool stuff had to flee to the east.
Cool.
What about you guys? I have no idea what any of y'all been up to.
I finished college and then decided I wanted to do more college. So I got a master's degree right after my undergrad. And then I moved back home to Florida and lived in my parents' basement, which I'm still living in to save money. And I'll be next steps, probably moving up to Des Moines in February, end of February. Finally living out on my own. So real excited.
Nice.
That's sick. I've always stayed in the Midwest. Went to Kansas City after Iowa State. Took a little tech job. Came back to Des Moines. Bought a house. Rest is history. Yes.
See, I bounced out of Iowa State. Went to do the Kroc Fellowship at National Public Radio. Shout out Joan Kroc. Rest in peace. And that was cool, but, you know, kind of wasn't feeling the big network journalism thing. So I got a job in Colorado, moved out to Colorado, for a little bit. And then, after that second job in Colorado, I had another gig called E-Town. And yeah, I don't know, got fired from that place, been chilling ever since. That unemployed life, selling magic cards. Yeah, about to be roommates with Sliva here in a couple weeks.
Come on down. Karina's breaking in the
bed. Yeah, I'm the first one to sleep on it.
So. It's got a mattress.
It's good. It's nice.
Although he's not a big mattress yet.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Are you still an evangelist for floor sleeping?
Who, me?
Yeah. Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Something's never changed.
Yeah. If anything, it's gotten worse. Like, it's better, you know? What about you? You still into bed sleeping?
You know, I can't break it.
That's a tough one to kick.
Sleeping on a mattress, like good.
You just got back from Japan, didn't you?
Yeah, I was over there for a couple of weeks for work.
Oh my god, for work?
Yeah.
That's so cool. What was that like? I've never been.
It was cool. God, where do we even start? Japan just opened up again to like regular tourist travel.
Oh, okay.
This past week, and so I got in right before the rush. So everything was, I think, probably emptier than it usually is.
That's awesome. That's such a cool way to see it. Which is nice,
you know, kind of being able to see stuff before, you know, whatever, all the COVID years worth of, like, pent-up demand for people to come and visit.
Yeah.
All comes crashing. Like, I'm sure everything's just mobbed now, but it's cool. The trains are great. The traffic is not great. I was in Tokyo for like a couple of days and did all that. Went to, like, you know, Shinjuku, Shibuya, Akihabara, all that. Meiji Shrine, Yogi Park, all the, I don't know, to me, kind of essential stuff. And then I had another weekend day. I went down to Hakone up in the mountains closer to like Fuji, which was super cool.
Kind of got a taste of it all, it sounds like.
It was neat. It was real neat. Food's really cheap there. The Japanese are very, very, very patient and understanding. They're good people.
I need a little bit of that.
But I don't know. Two weeks is only going to be gone. I was Japan out by the second week. There's some, like, this was, I'd never been outside of the United States before that.
Really?
So I'd never had that. No, never. And so I'd never had that experience of just trying to, like, be out in a public place and being like, holy shit, like, I can't speak in the language of my mind and be understood.
Yeah.
You know, and that, like,
that's a feeling for sure.
So
crazy.
But wow. It was good. It was real cool.
That's so cool. I'd love to go to Japan someday. On my list for sure.
Yeah. It's hot as shit.
Oh, maybe. Really? Yeah.
Like, I was warned that it gets hot there. But, like, I don't know who told me Japan's a temperate climate. It's not temperate at all. It's subtropical easily.
Yeah.
It gets hotter than shit. It's humid as shit. And they don't have, it's too humid regular. Like, air conditioners don't work there. So you have to have, like, all these little, like, mini spit air conditioners. Like, if you really need, like, regular, like, central air type thing, you have to have, like, six or seven of them.
Whoa. In a
building. So it's just like, God. Like, it's hot.
Oh,
don't
no.
Go in the summer. Go, like, now.
Yeah, it's probably nicer this summer.
Nice.
That's cool. All right. What about favorite bands? What's your favorite band right now?
I don't know. I have, like, all-time favorite bands that I've just, like, what I'm listening to right now lately. Do you know the band Chastity Belt?
Yeah.
Julio Shapiro has that record. Zerk that came out. I've been listening to that. I've been listening to Faye Webster. I've been listening to Julia Jacqueline.
Nice.
And then for this, I guess Whitney.
Nice, yeah. I think we did a Faye Webster album. Gosh, that was several months ago now, but yeah, she's great. What about you guys? I feel like maybe it hasn't changed since the last time I talked to you.
I just looked at my like songs on Spotify. It's just been, like, all, like, sales. So I've been learning guitar, so,
like, yeah.
Sales is super easy, like, triad kind of style stuff.
Yeah.
Same with, like, vacations, triad stuff. So it's been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly just guitar music that I've been trying to learn. I see Harlow's got a guitar in the back. Do you play it frequently?
Yeah, sometimes.
Oh, several. Oh, I didn't even see the others in the back, too.
Yeah, this is, they all live down here.
Got a home for them.
Awesome. What about you, Henry?
Yeah, I don't know. New stuff. Good idea pulling up your Spotify, Jason, but I'm looking at mine and it's all Los Tigres del Norte, which is a Norteños band from Mexico. But very good. They're like the number one band, I think.
Oh, I think you showed me one of their songs, actually.
It's just good, you know?
Yeah, it's just good honest, music. Like,
every single one of their songs is a story. Like, there's not a story in one of those songs. So it's just really easy to listen to. So shout out Los Tigres.
That sounds sick. Check that out.
Where would one start with these Northern Tigers?
That's a good question. I think so. Actual recommendation would be find a playlist of like a classics, like a Norteños classics, mm-hmm. stuff from like the 80s and 90s, because that's what got me into listening to Norteños, stuff like La Puerta Negra, and stuff like that. But basically, once I got into it, Los Tigres del Norte is like easily the top sound. Like when you think about Mexican music from the 80s, like it's them. But all that said, they're still putting out albums today, and they released an album the other month that has a song on it that's like, oh, it's time to wake up and have coffee. It's time for coffee now. Which, I don't know. It's like nice to listen to music that's not serious, you know?
That is your music.
Okay. That sounds so good.
A lot of rutina. But should we talk about Whitney? Should we talk about some
for sure.
music from Chicago?
Yeah. Our boys. Yeah, Whitney are their local, but they're a Chicago band.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, the album this week is Spark. Latest album from Whitney came out in September. They're from Chicago, formed by Julian Ehrlich and Max Kakachik. Don't know if I'm saying that right, but they were part of a different band together, and then that band kind of dissolved, and the two of them decided to create Whitney. It's got more than just the two of them in the band, but they're kind of at the center of it. And they've been kind of an indie rock favorite since their debut album, Light Upon the Lake, came out in 2016. Spark is their fourth studio album. And this one was a Henry pick this month. So I don't know, Henry, if you have anything you want to say about it before we kind of get more into it, but say whatever you like.
Yeah. First, shout out to Taylor Brown. Taylor who turned me Brown. On to Whitney.
Yeah.
She thought about Taylor Brown. Yeah, she was so cool.
Yeah. Biomedical illustration legend. But anyway, she put me on to Whitney. She like trained me to do my first KURE shift and showed me how to do all that. And she was playing a little Whitney, and I was like, it's pretty good. And all these years later, they're putting out music that sounds nothing like that. I also got the chance to see them live earlier this year. And they were playing this album kind of in its tenuous state. So they're like, some of these songs aren't final. Some of these were like not even done writing, but we're just gonna like kind of play them all. And so it was interesting to hear the live project and what that was. And it was already, they were already showing us, hey, it's like different Whitney. But then the album finally came out, and like, gotta be honest, it's like way better of an album than it was live when they were working on it. So like when I caught them, they had a lot of work to do, I think. Not saying, but I guess the way I just phrased that made it seem like it was like terrible, but it was really strong live, but it just wasn't quite cohesive and put together. So I really enjoyed when the album came out, it was done. Like they had kind of made those final decisions. So Whitney kind of rocking with them, even though that sound is starting to change a little way from country, trying to go a little more pop 80s. But country took the same path of the late 70s. So anyway, Whitney, that's kind of all I got.
Yeah, that's such a cool perspective to have, seeing it live and sort of unfinished, and then getting to hear the finished version.
Did you recognize any changes from like their live? Like before it was probably finalized, did you recognize any changes in the finalized album versus when they played it live? Make any comparisons there? It's probably hard because you just heard it once as well live. Like you didn't actually like take it all in. So
yeah, and really what it's more like is like I would hear like when I listened to the album, I would recognize things that I saw live that were like just being played, but they weren't quite a song. You know, like they might be jamming on like a motif or something like that and just going back and forth on it. And then when I listen to the album, I'm like, oh, that's like a whole song now. But cool for them to like play completely new music for a tour. You know, yeah. I think a lot of people were probably maybe a little miffed that they didn't play a ton of old stuff, but like I loved that they were just like, hey, if you're down, we're just gonna like play all this stuff. And they like took our phones. So Whitney, kind of cool, to be honest. I never saw myself being a big fan, but here I am all these years later.
Yeah, I think I'm pretty sure you were the first one, Henry, who told me about Whitney. I hadn't heard of them before. It was in college sometime. And yeah, I remember them sounding very, you know, whimsical, ethereal, very kind of light vocals and like some pretty forced nymph sounding stuff. And then this album is definitely a little different. Like Jason was saying, it kind of sounds like he's singing higher or something on this album.
Yeah, like, I don't know what it is exactly. Like we would like listen to like one from Spark and then go to like Light Upon the Lake, and it was like his voice is like so different between the two. I don't know.
He's really leaning into the falsetto now.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I think he is. But yeah, do you want to talk about how you first heard Whitney?
I feel like I heard it from Henny too. Yeah. It's kind of like a blur because like what I remember is we were both listening to it, and then Hank and I saw the same tour. They came to Denver, I think. And then I was like, no spoils, don't spoil anything, dude. And then like just a few days later, they made it to Kansas City. So I watched them with a buddy in Kansas City, and it was sick. I mean, crazy that he has the drums in the front. Like, and he sings, like, that's hard to sing while you're drumming, like, consistently. Like,
I did not know that, really?
Yeah, he drums in the front, and he sings. While playing drums.
He loves
being able to do that. That's crazy.
That rock.
Yeah. He's got, like, Peter Criss energy. That's the drummer for Kiss.
Oh, man.
I love it when a drummer sings.
Drumming and singing together, I mean, I'll go for it always. I mean, me, when I think of that, I think of Levon Helm, right, with the band, which I think might be a little closer to where Whitney's coming from, at least on those first couple of records, right? Nowadays.
Sure. You know,
yeah.
You know, it's they're clearly, they've been listening to like a bunch of like, you know, like 50s Motown kind of stuff.
Yeah, when did you hear about Whitney?
I feel like I have a similar story with the rest of you guys, right? At some point in the good old college radio days, I became aware of Light Upon the Lake, probably, you know, right after it came out, and it started doing big, big, big numbers. You know, I'm not the biggest Whitney head, right? I mean, I heard No Matter Where We Go. I heard No Woman. I heard Golden Days.
Hmm.
I was like, nice. You know, it's got a good. They've got a good sound, right? Mm-hmm. The songs are tight. The sonics are very right. I see what it's trying to do. It's nice. It's got. I mean, clearly, like it's all like track to tape. It's got that sound on it, right? Between that and the falsetto and the instrumentation and the horns. I mean, it's just. It's got that sound, right? Like a film photograph of an autumn day kind of feel.
Mm-hmm.
Love that. We're big fans of imagery on this podcast, describing what the sounds look like. Yeah. I think my first impression of Whitney was just like, it didn't sound like anything I'd ever heard before. Like just very unique. I think it was that falsetto singing, and I don't know, it was just so light sounding when I think a lot of what I was listening to at the time was very heavy and felt like more dense, and this felt more not super trogged down with too much stuff. It was just sort of, it feels like it's hovering above the surface or something. I don't know. But that's kind of my impression of Whitney, what they sound like. So with this album, do we want to talk about what we were expecting going into it? First impressions upon listening to it for the first time?
You know, yeah, John was talking about that like autumn photograph sort of Whitney feel that was definitely present in there for earlier projects. And this is just like a pop album. This is like kind of like the Allman Brothers stepped aside and made a pop album, or it kind of just feels like when another artist takes up another genre for a project, it feels like Whitney has sort of taken this up.
It sounds totally different.
Yeah. And I'm, you know, I'm interested to see where things like these go. Cause like, I don't know, I really liked this kind of like country element in Whitney's sound. And I thought when they bring that back, like the guitarist, I thought was real slick. And I was kind of worried that I'd be losing some of that slick guitar play. But I kind of just found it repackaged into something different here. So I think Whitney is kind of still doing interesting stuff. When I kind of got into it, I expected it to be more hectic than I actually found it to be. I ended up finding it really relaxing and like a pretty calm, smooth album. Like easy listening came into my head. I don't know why, but just kind of real warm, familiar sounds relative to the genre, but relative to Whitney, it was all pretty fresh. So kind of enjoyable. What about y'all?
I was thrown for a loop when I put this on, right? I mean, what you're saying, I mean, Whitney's got the, they've got the Whitney sound, right? All that tape compression, you know, it's like, it's got that sound. I put this on, I'm like, what the heck? Do I got the right record? You know, given, I think they got away from that, you know, in between the first two and this one, they did that covers album, which I don't know if y'all listened to.
Yeah,
to that. There's some neat stuff on there. I like that that David Byrne song. They do that Strange Overtones on there. That was good.
Yeah, Hammond song. They did the cover of Hammond song.
Yep.
That was so good.
I put this one on, right? And I'm trying to, like, I'm like, what's going on? It's so different. Like, you know, I like when bands change it up, right? That's always fun. I mean, it's easy. I mean, you know, you're three records in, you're young dudes. I mean, you're trying to try something different, kind of get out of your comfort zone. That's cool. But I mean, it's so different. And I went down a little bit of a rabbit hole trying to figure out like what happened here.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure, cause when Light Upon the Lake came out, I mean, they blew up. They got some serious numbers on that bad boy. I don't know if you know about this, but Whitney's number one stan here in Chicago is Mayor Lori Lightfoot.
Oh yeah.
Is she a big Whitney fan?
August 30th is Whitney Day in Chicago.
What?
Shut up.
For real.
Is August Mayor 30th. Lightfoot seriously a fan? That's so funny.
In 2019, to mark the release of their second record, she declared August 30th Whitney Day in Chicago.
No,
that's
shit.
Crazy
for real. I just have this image in my mind of Lori Lightfoot sitting in her place watching all over the like surveillance cameras of the parks, making sure that nobody's standing too close together, just pounding Modelo's to Whitney.
Yeah, dude, it's funny you say Modelo's. John, did you see that photo? Lightfoot with Modelo, dude. So fucking real, dude.
I'm like, why are you buying beer at CVS? That's like the most expensive place you can buy a case of beer.
Yeah, it almost felt like a PR stunt. You know, like, here I am, just an American buying beers.
Yeah, just buying a case of Modelo. She's funny, man. You know, she's got the biggest dick in Chicago. If you haven't heard.
Oh, man, speaking of them being popular and blowing up, though, right around that time, I ended up working with someone at NPR who went to Brown, and they said when Whitney was blowing up and doing their tour and coming through, these two guys came to Brown and slayed Puss.
Ah, damn.
At Brown. And I was like, that doesn't even sound like of all the stories to mention. And we're like in the elevator at NPR, and she's like, oh, yeah, Whitney. Yeah, those guys fucking slayed at Brown. I'm like, really? They don't seem like the kind of guys who slay, to be honest.
Just a couple of tall, lanky, flannel-wearing white dudes from Logan Square.
Yeah. like they fuck. Don't get me wrong, but like they're not
good for
crushing
them,
it. But But anyway, just to give you an idea of how popular they really were, like, they blew up, man.
They're fucking crazy rock stars.
That's hilarious. I mean,
that's what that story sounded like.
That's pretty sick.
God damn. That's so funny.
That's just, yeah, fun fact. That's so funny, dude.
Fuck, what else? I'm trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, why is Berkeley different, right? Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I'll get into this later. I'm not big on this one. I like the covers record. I like the first one. I think the second one is more of the first one. It's fine. But I'm not really riding with Spark here. And I think it's mostly the production that I don't like. And Henry, we can get into this because I'm curious, because you saw these songs live. When I was looking into this, I found, I think just a couple of weeks ago, they played at The Current up in Minnesota, and they did some of these songs like really stripped down, and I liked them like a lot more. So I think my problem is here is all this production that's getting in the way, and I'm trying to figure out like what happened on this, like why does it sound so different, right? I mean, they gave up like the Whitney sound and kind of gone for something totally different, and I'm trying to, like, did they change their label? No, they're still on Secretly Canadian. And I think I figured out what happened. I think it's the producer. I think the guy who produced this is responsible for it. I was looking around, right, and I saw that the guy who produced it, and I found this article. This appears to be in The Ringer, which is a publication I haven't heard from yet, and they get into talking to the producer. See, if I was smart, I would have just like bookmarked this or pulled it out. But they've got this interview with the producer, this guy, Brad Cook, who produced the second one, and I guess executive produced the Bon Iver record, the 22 million, and plays with Justin Vernon all the time.
Oh.
Right. Good fit. Good fit for Whitney. Good fit for the sound. And like, I don't know if it was his idea, like, we're going to make all the song names in all caps and whatever, you know, goofy aesthetic choices. But I found them talking to Brad Cook. And in this, they're talking about like working on the second record and then coming into to this one. And to quote here, let's talk about producer Brad Cook noticed that the vintage tape machine Whitney records to wasn't properly calibrated. As he and the band experimented, they lost track of the tonal center of the songs, which messed up the pitch and made overdubs and digital tracking difficult. So they just didn't want to deal with the tape machine. The producer said, I can't put this in Logic and overdub to it. It's tape.
That's right? Crazy.
I got to figure out speed. And they're just like, we don't want to deal with it.
That's so funny.
We were playing with tape speed all the time. We almost ruined it because we weren't really paying attention that much. Yeah, you can't. It's, if you're going to overdub, right? I mean, you got to make sure that you're playing back at the right speed. I mean, it's a whole lot to worry about. That's kind of the thing with it. And my understanding, I could be wrong on this, is that those first two Whitney records are like just tracked down live to tape, which I think is part of their sound. And I think it, you know, it's one of those limitations that forces you, if you're playing it with a live band and kind of one shot, right, you kind of have to have the arrangement down, right? It's a limitation that breeds certain types of creative choices.
That's right, funny you say that.
You got it in the room, everybody's got it, you know, the instruments have to be out of each other's way, right? I think there's something to it.
And yeah, I wonder if the producer had a lot of influence on Twirl, the song off Spark.
I'm 100% convinced.
Twirl sounded like very Bon Iver-esque.
100%.
I was just telling Karina that. I'm like, holy shit, that's crazy. It makes sense now that you say that.
This is a Whitney and Brad Cook record here, because he's talking about that second record. And the producer's talking about that, on a Forever Turned Around, that I'm going to totally botch these. I should be better at these like Polish-ish Chicago last names. Kakasak and Ehrlich boxed themselves into what instruments they could use or how they could record. Brad Cook, the producer, says, I brought a Mellotron synthesizer with me and I got voted off the island so fast. It's like, no way. We don't want to put that on our record. That was the general vibe.
Wow.
You know what a mellotron is, right? What kind of sound that gets? No. You ever heard like the Beatles, Strawberry Fields Forever?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
A mellotron's like a big thing. It's got keys and it's got like all these little like pieces of tape inside, and you press them and it boop, like plays each note from like a strip of tape. It's got that old like warbly, like people do like string sounds on them. But like, I don't know, just to me, I like read about the guy producing this record. He's like, yeah, I rocked into the studio for the second Whitney record and I brought this mellotron in there. And they're like, we don't want this.
Yeah,
just being bummed about it. And I saw in one of these, trying to like look into some live performances at this new stuff. And now they've got that little it's like a digital, right? I think somebody just, they found like a mellotron, they digitized tapes, and now they just got like a little like proper keyboard that just does the sounds. And they've got that thing on stage now. So I think Brad Cook won. I think that's what's going on with this third record here. He says, fuck the tape, we're gonna do it in a DAW. You're gonna let me put my synthesizers in it. You know, this is a Brad Cook production.
Yeah. Wow.
That's crazy.
That's very cool to know.
Right, but I mean, that's just the mystery is solved. Right. I have a you know, it is what it is. I'm not, to me, Sparks Ever Produced. I really liked those kind of sparse arrangements that I heard. But now, Henry, this is where I want to dig in with you, because you saw these live in kind of a primitive form and you said you didn't prefer it to what came out on the record. Right. So
yeah. I think it was just like the arrangements weren't necessarily dialed in. So we were hearing like, you know, 3 to 4 minutes of like, here's what we've got for song A. Okay. And here's what we've got for song B. And some of those were a little like, you know, more put together. Here's a full song, but maybe we don't have the words written yet. But some of those definitely were just like, yeah, we're just going to like jam on this. And like, you know, we take like LSD and like, it's hard to go to sleep. And that's what this song is kind of about. Yeah. And I'm like, yeah, all right, man, you know, and I'm like, listen to it. I'm like, kind of just, you know, jamming out. It almost feels like you're on LSD really right now. So you're struggling to do crowd work. and all of that said, like, it was still like good music. And I think, you know, you're mentioning the name of one of the producers. There's this other guy and I had his name pulled up and I was trying to find.
There's a second producer. Yeah. And I saw he's been on.
Zayad Asrar. And he
that
played
Snail Mill record. He played, yeah,
exactly, yeah. And he did during the live performance. He had like a little drum kit, and he was playing percussion. And he seemed to really live in the live music space super well. Like I thought, what he was contributing digitally to what Elric was doing on the analog drums was actually super impressive live. And I felt like some of that was dialed back on the produced version. So, you know, there's definitely, you know, pros and cons depending on what aspect. But in general, I thought just what I appreciated about the album is that it was packaged and put together. And maybe just the performance I caught was like, you know, dudes who do drugs are cool. But then like, if you're like all about the drugs, you're like, all right, yeah, all right, fellas, like psychedelics aren't that cool. You know what I mean? Like relax, boys.
Yeah.
I mean, that's Logan Square in a nutshell.
Oh, for sure.
The vibe. Oh, So I know before Whitney, what was like a 7-8 piece band? They had all their horn players and everything. So if they had one of their, when you saw them, who did they have on stage with them? Was it the full band or?
So both times I've seen them, I saw them in probably. Oh wait, actually, I've got the thing here. So I saw them in 2019, and then I saw them earlier this year. And it's the main dudes, this guy Ziad, and then I think they've got some like session musicians who will come on tour and fill out the band. So both times I saw him is probably about 6-7 dudes on stage, you know, synth, rhythm, drums, lead, whole deal.
Okay, so they've still got all the horn guys.
Well, at least in this, I mean, first time around, yes. This last time, no.
They don't have them this time.
It was kind of just... Jason, do you have any recollection?
When I saw him when what was the one after Land of the Lake? I think Forever Turnaround. I think they had probably like six or seven people on that time. Yeah. Because they did have horns.
That's a full stage.
I mean,
you know, it was a full stage for sure. And it was a small venue that I saw them at too at the time. So it was packed up there. Not a lot of movement going on.
I was looking at some of the stuff when this record came out, and like one of the things I keep saying, I don't know if it was part of like the press language or whatever, but they're like, Whitney, now a duo. They're like, so what's going on? Like, did they fire the band? You know, they've stripped this down, and like listening through Spark, right? I mean, one of the components of the Whitney sound for me, right, is, you know, they get to their, you know, their second chorus or their bridge or whatever, and then like all the horns come in.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They've got those horns. It's a great sound. And I'm listening to Spark. I'm like, where are the horns? There's no horns. Like, the last song on that record, the horns show up. I'm like, oh my God. Like, it's the horns, and then the record's over. And so I was just, I don't know. I'm curious what's going on. I mean, right, maybe that's a pandemic thing. It's just, it's not feasible to get seven people together and like try to track horns over Zoom. You know, like, I don't know, right? It's easier to plug in your Mellotron.
who produced Forever Turnaround and Land of the Lake? It wasn't
I don't know.
Brad, was it
Upon the Lake? Is somebody, Karina, are you've got the digits moving there?
Yeah. Whitney Jonathan Ratto.
John Ratto.
Jonathan Ratto. Jonathan Ratto is the name. Whitney is the name.
Jonathan Colorado.
Jonathan Ratto. Okay. I've never heard of him before. Oh, with Foxygen.
Cool.
He was the producer on Light Upon the Lake. He did The Lemon Twigs. He's worked with Foxygen.
Beach Fossils,
Cutworms,
Ways
Blood.
Ooh, which Beach Fossils albums did you do?
Somersault, 2017.
Nah. Wait, Tim Heidecker? Holy shit. Yeah, produced Tim Heidecker's album. Holy shit. That's funny.
And he did the 2019 Whitney Forever Turned Around.
Oh, so he's the other producer. Okay.
Do you guys have any songs on Spark that stood out in particular?
Real Love, the first 5 seconds, there's like a bass part that makes me think something's going to happen, and that rocked, and then it doesn't really go anywhere. But I like the bass on the first 5 seconds of Real Love. I like the version of that they played on the radio like 2 weeks ago, The Current, where it's just stripped down and acoustic. I really like that version of it. That's what gets me, right? Is once I heard that, my first impression of this record, I'm like, these songs fucking suck. Like, I just can't get through the, I can't hear it, right? I mean, it's, Whitney had a sound, right?
Yeah.
If you heard that, I mean, if you put anything off those first two records on, even if I hadn't heard it, I'd be like, oh yeah, that's Whitney, right? Just sonically, they've got a sound. And this, to me, it doesn't have, it's not distinct. It sounds like everything else. I mean, there's so much right now that just has slick production, synthesizers, male falsetto, jazz chords. I mean, it's like, it's a thing, it's a sound, right? I mean, and it's, if you're not doing anything to sort of distinguish yourself in that space, you're just going to get lost. So that was kind of a bummer to me, but hearing it with kind of all that, you know, taken out and like give it some room to just breathe and come out, I still think that these guys can write decent songs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have some, I maybe take some umbrage with, you know, maybe some of the lyrics on this one. I think, you know, it's not, love's some well-trodden soil. You know, breakups are well-trodden soil in the area of songwriting. And I've heard too much recently, or that just comes at it in a different way, right? That this kind of, I think, more expected kind of, I don't know. It's, he doesn't write with a perspective that's unique or interesting to me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
They're not bad songs, but it's just, you know, I've heard too many good breakup records.
Yeah, no, that's fair. It is definitely like a breakup somber record, and there's been a lot of that. What was the other one that we recently did, Henry, that the one that Danny was on? The Like You We album. That was like
a
major breakup album as well. Just super somber and sad. There's been a lot of that.
Have you heard X-Ray?
No.
Do you know the band Daughter?
Yeah, I love them.
So Elena Tondra from Daughter has another project called X-Ray, EX:RE. I think the sort of double entendre is that it's like, you know, regarding X. And it is.
Wait, how is that spelled?
EX:RE. But pronounced like the radiographic imaging.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I've heard of this.
Holy shit. That record's unbelievable.
Yeah, she's amazing. I love
like
her.
That, like that is a devastating breakup record. Almost venomous.
Yeah.
But never malicious. I don't know how to put it. It's just I've heard so much like this, right? To just hear some, like, you know, any of these dudes just falsetto crooning about real love. You know, I can't do it. I can't do it anymore, man.
Yeah.
So,
you know, it's fine. You know, it's like he has the right to, you know, if that's how he feels, he has the right to write a song. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and fucking gatekeep writing breakup songs. But it's just
everybody has their own perspective on it, you know, and there's always.
I appreciate taking the risk. I mean, this is a big shuffle for Whitney, right? I mean,
ditching
definitely. All their production style, ditching the sonics, ditching the horns. I mean, just like it's. But
maybe it was the breakup. Maybe that just made him feel like I gotta change the way that my band sounds, and I gotta get a different producer. Who knows? But
also for context, I think they were tiring on the old sound. Like, I don't think they were as interested in the stuff they were making, and so you know, that's got to be scary when you fall out of love with the kind of music that you're like known for, and then try to venture out and
you find something new. You have to find your new sound.
Right. I mean, I mean, it's there's a lot of risk involved in that, right? I mean, you're sticking yourself out there quite a bit. And
for sure,
what I would really, because I do think these guys can write good songs, right? And they're Chicago dudes. I want to see them succeed, right? I mean, Chicago doesn't have the scene it used to have. I mean, we've got Wilco, right? local institution. What was that?
What about for the youth?
And there's Jeff Sweeney's son. That's
right.
Like, no one under 30 is listening to Wilco.
I like Wilco. You know, I like, you know, going to a guitar shop and, you know, just running into people playing Wilco's music they're a local institution. They're good dudes. I mean, they play locally a lot. They do a lot of good around here. Jeff Tweedy produces a lot. I mean, he talks to a lot of folks. They're a good local institution. I mean, but it's just like, man, we don't have a lot else going on in that space, right? I mean, Smashing Pumpkins is not so much. Billy Corgan's
I interviewed this band called Motel Breakfast. They're from Chicago and Milwaukee and one other place, but they're like mainly Chicago based. They're really good. They're a good local band, something different. So that's,
I think, Beach Bunny.
Beach Bunny. I love Beach Bunny.
Right. Yeah. I mean, we have some indie act, but I mean, like, we need some more heavy hitters coming out of Chicago.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't had, right? We're not claiming Kanye anymore. I don't think he's repping us.
Henry, what were your favorite songs off of it?
Man, you know, I almost have to listen more still to determine favorites.
Okay.
I have a couple songs that I liked and pulled out.
Yeah.
So Twirl in Blue, when I was listening through, those were songs I recognized from the live performance. Like I was mentioning, there was like some common threads, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I think those were things that they had put together, like the chorus and stuff, I kind of remembered. So Blue and Twirl were kind of two tracks that I had plucked out. Those kind of sounded interesting to me. And then their singles. I also kind of wanted to talk on this album. I know I'm not the only one noticing it, but like bands who will like drop a single and then the next week drop that single plus another single on Spotify.
Yeah.
And like Always did it. And it's,
yeah, they
it's
did.
Definitely like, it's like an SEO marketing thing or whatever when it comes to releases.
I don't love it.
But I know it's
like,
it's annoying.
It's like, damn, which version of it? Because I don't know. I'm like trying to look through all the Whitney songs I've got, and there's like 8 different album arts for all these different songs that are otherwise the same, the exact same version.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyway,
this is a bit out of bounds, but it's got to be SEO type stuff.
For sure.
If you guys remember Abby Romano from Radio Days, she was out here last week running the Chicago Marathon, and she was showing me Spotify. You can't add the entirety of an album to a playlist anymore.
Really?
Huh? Like, yeah, if you click on those dots, right, and you should try to like add to playlist, try it right now. If you've got the most updated Spotify and you try to
add fun. I'm live right now.
Why do they do that?
I'm pretty sure you can't. Yeah, you can still add full albums to playlists.
Can you?
Yeah. Maybe only on desktop.
Oh,
maybe it's like a web functionality.
But it's just stuff like that, right? I mean, it's like listening is different. I mean, that's why I was curious. I mean, with all these songs, like what's going on? I mean, right? If you're a new band now, you can't do what Whitney did in 2016. That's not how this goes anymore. If you want to come up like that and have, you know, Lori Lightfoot give you a day, you know, you've got to blow up on TikTok. You got to have TikTok songs.
Oh my God, TikTok. Yeah.
That's it. You know, that's music now. Unfortunately.
Was that artist in Yeet?
Oh, fucking Yeet.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeet.
Yeah. What about you? What's your favorite songs?
Oh, shit. I mean, like, the middle section of the album for me just kind of got a little dull. Like, probably after, like, Twirl. I know Harlow, like, Real Love, but I don't know. I kind of fell out and then picked back up near the end, like near like Heart Will Beat.
Yeah, Real Love stood out because I think it was like the single. So that's like the first one I heard off of it.
These songs all sound the same.
They do. There's not a lot of variation. Which, I liked Memory. I thought Memory was pretty
good. But I mean, it's just they're very samey. The other note I had here is that there's a song on there, Self.
Yeah.
Self fucking suck. We've got that note. We've got County Lines finally has horns on it. Why are all the song titles in all caps? That's a minor annoying thing.
The songs in the middle kind of like lot, like they don't have like a really good hook or anything that a lot of their songs are known for. Like their top ones, like Golden Days or Valley, whatever.
The songwriting structure is definitely different in some of these tracks.
Mm-hmm. But I feel bad just being like, where's my hook at? You know, because that's like the very normie thing to say. There's no fucking hook to this song.
Okay. It's okay to want that.
Yeah. But some do have
fans are changing.
I think they might have overthought it, right? Because then I was like, what happened? Like, did they run out of time? Is Secretly Canadian saying, hey, boys, you know, time to release.
Yeah, the dictatorship, the Secret Canadian there.
Yeah.
So they had all pandemic time to work on this. And like, I feel like some of these, right? Maybe if you have too much time and too much freedom and
you know, overthink and you rework and then it becomes too overproduced.
How many layers of synthesizers can I put in this thing? Tightly can I tune the vocal and get it perfect?
Right? They may have done too much.
My intonation's always 100% on. Right. I mean, it's like, I just rip it, fix the tape machine, right?
Use some of that Whitney money.
Yeah. Use some of that Whitney money.
Get a new tape machine.
Go to Chicago. I don't know if they would fix a tape machine. You can find someone in Chicago to fix a Tascam. I know you can.
You can go on Craigslist and find a nerd who loves tape and will just, you know, fix that stuff.
Oh, like, I mean, right, that's a benefit of living in a major metropolitan area. I mean, you can find someone to fix that bad boy. Call Jeff Tweedy.
Call Tweedy. Oh, yeah.
Jeff Tweedy.
Jeff Tweedy's like, I got 10. You want to borrow one?
You're Whitney. You have a day. There's no Wilco day, not that I'm aware of. You know, ooh, call Jeff Tweedy. Yeah. Say, hey, man, we want Nels Klein to play pedal steel on the next Whitney record. He might do it. Send him, you know, send him some demos of it with all those collab. Like 7, 9, like 11, those jazz extensions in it. He's a jazz guy. He might do it.
That'd be amazing.
That'd be killer.
That would, yeah.
I'm not. what else? What else on Whitney?
Yeah. Do we have any other anything else we want to get in?
I'll maybe throw in that I think I read an interview once. And they were talking about putting out albums or making recordings and releasing them and basically being like the second they're done with them, immediately unsatisfied because time just keeps moving forward. That. And like that can only really just lock you in time. And I wonder if when this album was made, they were kind of in that headspace. But like you said, someone at Secretly Canadian was like, you know, we got a deal, like you got to put something out. And so I feel like they like landed on this. But I wonder if you chatted with them, if they would just be like, yeah, we're kind of already beyond it now anyways. Because it felt like they were already over it when I saw them live almost.
I'm still in pandemic brain, right? I mean, March of 2020 is the longest month of my life.
Yeah, straight
I'm still not out of it. You know, like, so I can imagine, right, just sitting with these and brooding and just, I mean, I think a lot of artists struggle, right? I mean, putting something out. But I saw a lot of that same stuff of Whitney talking about. I mean, especially with like Light on the Lake, they're just like, we're sick of playing this album.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, it's got to be tough.
They toured like, the shit out of that record.
Right? Yeah. I mean, and they were like instant classics. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like right off the bat. But this one, I feel like, did you guys ever, I don't know, is there a band that you've got? I was talking to Tara about this last night on the phone. We were talking about this album and Whitney. With Vampire Weekend, as they've put out albums throughout the years, it's always taken me a minute to get into the next one. Like when Contra came out, I loved it. Then Modern Vampires of the City, I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. And obviously it does not suck. Like I just took some time to get into it. And then the same is true for, what was their Vampire Weekend's last album? Sony Music?
Yeah, the one with the Earth on the album. Kind of what it's called.
Yeah. Anyways, all of which to say that point still down is... sometimes you got to like listen to a band and just kind of like give them the chance. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many chances I can give this album. Like about 3 or 4 is usually where I'm like, if I'm not getting pulled in by now, it's like not going to happen. And I think I don't know that this album is like got enough there, you know, to pull you in by listen 3 or 4. It's a bit sparse. But though we've largely talked bad about it, as far as I am, you know, I still like the musicianship, you know, the guitarist, which is Max, the drummer, and he's then the slick. Other one is the guitarist.
I think so. I think you've got it right. Yeah. I mean, those, he's got some slick licks on there.
Slick licks. He plays slick live. You know, I love the musicianship. I think the drumming is really, really good. You know, we talked a lot about sort of the melody of all this, but as far as the rhythm is concerned, like Whitney is super fresh, super tight. I think you could like take a bunch of Whitney stems and like use those as samples and get some pretty cool sounds. So there's definitely interesting stuff put forward here, but interesting songs. I don't know.
It's definitely going to be a save a few songs off the album, and that's about it. It's hard to make just a front to back banger of an album. Like there's tons of
Whitney's
songs.
Whitney's done it like 3 times.
Whitney has done it 3 times.
That covers album is also cover to cover. Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we know it's not impossible for them, but maybe with this producer, it might be.
Hear about this. I saw them talking about that covers record when I was, you know, trying to figure out what was going on with Whitney here and how they got their own day and their own craft beer. Which they also have, by the way.
What?
Yeah, there's Whitney beer.
That's amazing.
That's sick.
So Chicago.
Yeah.
Whitney, hold up. I've got it in a tab. Sour dry hopped Belgian table beer. the Whitney
thumbs
sour.
Down. Henry, not.
Sounds lame. Just sounds give me lame. A Modelo.
Sour is the new IPA, did you hear?
Now yeah, tell the IPA guys that.
That's so funny.
But I was looking at the covers record. They're talking about, they're like, yeah, we knocked that out in like a week. They're like, we toured the shit out of that first record. They don't have, you know, that many songs to play, and so they were already playing some covers, and they, you know, nailed a couple of them down, and they're like, shit, I mean, these are coming so easy, let's just book another week in the studio and just boom 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 boom, just, you know, knock one out each day. And I guess that's what they did, right? They didn't overthink it, they just did it.
Yeah, they just did it. Yeah, I think that's just maybe key for them,
just play it, you know, record it live, and then just put them away, don't listen to it, just
don't overthink it. Yeah,
yeah, don't, because then you're gonna be like, we fucked this up. And so much of that shit, I mean, it's just like, nobody's going to notice. You'll notice, right? Because you played it. It's you. But it's like, there's a lot more of that will fly than you think. There are finished records that, you know, I've listened to a ton of times and be like, wait a second, they fucked this up. Right? Yeah. But it's just like, no one cares. You're not going to notice.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's what, you know, the bigger things that it breathes. And Spark does not breathe. Spark. It's just,
it's too uptight, maybe. What other artists would you guys recommend based off of this album that people listen to?
Maybe kind of a different space. If you like the falsetto thing, My Morning Jacket, Jim James goes to like the falsetto register. A lot of their newer stuff, I think they're kind of trying a similar thing where they're like, oh, let's put some, you know, spicy jazz chords in here.
Yeah, that's all.
But like a lot of their, right, I mean, they came from what are they, they're like a Tennessee or a Kentucky band, if I'm not mistaken, and so they start out like a lot more Louisville, there we go.
Okay.
And so they start off like a lot of the early stuff, I mean, it's very, you know, folk country oriented, right? I mean, it's, they've got a great sound, they rock, so it might be a little kind of different than Whitney, but I'd highly recommend.
Yeah, no, that's a solid recommendation. I love My Morning Jacket. Henry, what about you? Any similar artist recs?
Yeah, I like what John Harlow's thinking, you know, like basically the way I see it is, if you're listening to Whitney and you're like more of the roots side of Whitney, like the country, bluesgrass, folk sort of deal, then I would listen to just like old country, like country gold from like the 70s, 80s, 90s, real slick guitar, tight Telecaster sound. If you listen to this new record though, and you're like, man, I really love the synth and all that, I would say just about any other
would be. Open Spotify, go to the first playlist you see and just hit play on it.
Yeah. The character of the genre on this newer project is a little harder to like point down to someone else's interests. Like as I listened to the album, I wasn't sure I knew who is the kind of person who listens to this type of music regularly. Mm-hmm. So I found myself kind of lacking on that side. But if you do like some of that OG Whitney, if you're listening to this album, you're like, I too also didn't like Spark that much, listen to some Allman Brothers Band. You know what I mean? Get a little crazy. A little Glen Campbell or something. I don't know. Just go back.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
Love that. All right. Sick. Well, that's kind of it for time on this one. Thanks, everybody, for participating. It was a fun one. Thanks, everybody, who's listening, tuning in. Next time for the November album, we're doing the new Alves, which I'm really excited about. And then in December, we're going to do the King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard album comparison.
Oh, shit.
So tune in for that. I'll keep everybody updated on, you know, what's going on with
that. You piqued Harlow's interest on that one.
All right. Well, it's going to cut us off here any second. So good seeing you guys. Have a good rest of your day.
John, good seeing you, brother. We'll be right back.
Oklahoma. And dinner, February 8th.